In the introduction to this that you'll have read, I've talked a lot about neurodivergence, which probably means absolutely nothing to some of you. Am I right? Now, part of that is autism, and I think that is what most people want me to talk about, but it's much wider than that. Now, autistic people and those with ADHD, which is also part of neurodivergence, are doctors, teachers, lawyers, nurses, business owners, shopkeepers, and much more. Some are even pastors. Many are children's workers and do all sorts of work within the church. You'll also find quite a few autistic people and those with ADHD are attending this conference. That shocks a lot of people, and I have no idea why. Now, remember, if you have met one autistic or neurodivergent person, you have met one neurodivergent person, because everybody is completely different. I'm going to explain that in a little while, that it's not linear, it's circular when you're thinking about autism. Now, let me give you a short lesson in the terminology. Neurodiverse is everyone. So all of you are neurodiverse. Neurotypical are those who are not autistic, have ADHD, or any of the other things that fit within neurodivergence. It's often called normal. Neurodivergent means autism, ADHD, sensory processing disorder, dyspraxia, which has now changed its name and it's too long, so I refuse to use it. I'm carrying on using dyspraxia. Situational mutism, pathological demand avoidance, and I could go on and on and on. There are so many different things that fit into that category. But they are people whose brains work differently and often see the things that we miss, so they can bring so much to what we do in our churches, but are often not asked to bring that wisdom into our churches. Many are great thinkers, designers, inventors. Some are great carers and full of empathy. Some of our greatest entrepreneurs in this country and the greatest inventors have been and are neurodivergent. Have I built your expectation up now? I'm going to tell you a story about David that I met quite a number of years ago on a church weekend. As you've probably heard, we were both children's evangelists, and that is where I met this young man. I didn't know he was going to be in the program we were running. He's autistic. As he came up, he said, "I'm an aughty." And God, I don't like him because he made me like this. So I think recently diagnosed. And I said, "Well, you're more than welcome. You can talk to me anytime. We don't mind if you don't like God today. Just join in as much as you want to." And then there was just one part of the program where we started to think about how you listen to God. I won't go into the whole story, it's too long, we've only got an hour. But he ended up with him discovering Psalm 139, verses 13 and 14. "You created the deepest parts of my being. You put me together inside my mother's body. How you made me is amazing and wonderful. I praise you for that. What you have done is wonderful, and I know that very well." He looked at it. He looked at it again, and he went, "God gets my brain." And he was so excited. In fact, at the end of the program, when his parents came in to collect him, he almost bowled them over, running at them, shouting, "God gets my brain. He made it. He understands it." And there began his journey as an autistic, wonderful Christian young man. Now, I'm often asked if those that I work with can be Christians. I always know when the question is coming because they come up to me looking furtively around, sort of just to make sure nobody is actually listening to the question. Can those people you work with actually become Christians? Can they understand enough? Well, what sort of a question is that? I mean, Steve sometimes has to hold me back and remind me to be gracious and kind. I also get asked, if they can't vocalise what they believe, how do we know they believe? As if that's a trick question. My answers? This is a practiced response. For those with additional needs and disabilities, their faith is no less faithful, and their God is no less powerful. The work of Jesus on the cross is no less redemptive, and their Holy Spirit is not smaller. His work is just the same as for the rest of us. They're still made in God's image, and the ground in front of the cross has level access. And that's something I'm profoundly grateful for as a wheelchair user. How do we know if they can't put it into words? We don't need to know. And isn't it great to know that it's all of God's grace and not what we can speak? There will be times that you can see it, although sometimes fleetingly and easily missed. And there'll be other times where it's as clear as day. But between each member of the Trinity, they've got it covered. And we don't need to understand. We can just leave it with the Holy Spirit and praise that God gets it and knows. And for some of us who are activists, isn't it really hard to take our hands off and just let the Holy Spirit do what he does? I know I find it hard. In that vein, I'm going to just tell you about Isaac. Isaac is a twin. He has autism and learning disabilities. He doesn't speak. Let's just say his disabilities are profound and deep. But Isaac gets it. His mum was really upset one day. And his thing is YouTube. And he found a song on YouTube that he liked when he managed to get to church. And he kept going through it and playing bits and playing bits. And then when he was satisfied, he took it up to his mum and just kept on playing that part of the song. And it took her a while to actually catch on what he was doing. And it was the line of a song that at that moment in time, she needed to hear. This is a profoundly learning disabled child who found the exact words his mum needed to hear from God that morning. Full of God's Spirit. I love that story. But what about how we teach, disciple, and mentor those who are neurodivergent? I mean, you can put this into any disability, by the way, but this is what I've been asked to speak about. There's a huge lack of evangelically based material for those who struggle with reading. And many that are neurodivergent will struggle with reading. Not all, many are very good readers. But if they're a good reader, they might not be able to process the poor line length sentences that we sometimes use in books. They might not be able to process a sort of language and the fact that it's not actually sort of solid, simple language that you can understand. The average reading age of people in the UK is 9 to 11 years old. So why do we as churches put everything in writing? If we are evangelising, we should be prepared to not have everything in writing, to find other ways than a tract to give someone. Theology books are rarely accessible, and I know that. I'm visually impaired. I cannot read a theology book. I can't even read one that's about disability theology. Isn't that ironic? Neurodiverse young people are rarely included in programmes that mentor into service. Now, we talk about mentoring into leadership. I prefer mentoring into service, which includes leadership. But that means that if you have young people that may not lead, they can still serve and they can still be part of our mentoring process. And yet I find that they are overlooked because it is assumed they can't. They still have God-given gifts and the character that they need to serve. Now, the greater part of disability theology thinking is based in revisionist theology, and I'm assuming that you will all know what I mean by that. Okay? Just say left of liberal. It is not theologically based where we would be. It is based on how I view God, but not on who is the God that we see in the Bible. So each one will have a different theology. So there's lots of books in there, out there, that are saying this, that, and the other. And it's especially noticeable in the area of neurodivergence, because autistic people are coming up with their own theology as well. I'm going to be incredibly rude now, because the evangelical church in this country has not done disability theology, other than the theology of suffering. Theology of disability is completely different. I do not suffer. And my disability is not a tragedy. I'm still God's creation. And that is the same for anybody who is neurodivergent. When you think of all this, is it any wonder that there are very few disabled evangelicals out there? I am trying to find someone I can mentor into the roles that I do. Can I find anybody? It's very hard. Add to that that the largest unreached people group in the whole world is people with disabilities, including neurodivergence. 94% unreached or unconnected with the gospel. And where they are connected where the accessible resources are, which are not orthodox theology. These are figures that still grieve and shock me today, and I've known them for years. Now, in 30 years of ministry and in my work with the Additional Needs Alliance, I find many situations that could imply that neurodivergent people are just not wanted in our churches. So I should have actually warned you when I started, I'm going to be a little bit brutal. But that is not my personality. I'm actually quite a gentle person. I know many families who've been turned away from their churches because of their children with additional needs. Try an email a week and the many conversations I have. Some of them are on the third church that have turned them away. Some of them after lockdown said, I'm not going back. And why should they when they're treated like they are? This includes pastors of children who have additional needs, who have been asked to leave their post. That is shocking. I've cried many tears with people on that one. I've seen children and young people refused entry into the children's or youth work because they are a health and safety risk. I've seen young people effectively excluded because a church wouldn't change one thing that would cost no money to implement and would have helped many others to access what happened in church. I've had phone calls from churches asking how they can legally exclude a child. And it wasn't about violent or dangerous behaviour, it was just a child being autistic. I've even been asked to give training in restraint to a church. When I queried it and I offered training so that they didn't even get to the point of needing restraint, I am trained in it, by the way, they didn't want to know because it meant change. So they went off to try and find somebody else who could actually train them in restraint. Calm down. I've seen parents told that they shouldn't reward their child's bad behaviour with treats. So this is the treat. The child is in meltdown because the environment is not safe for them. And the parents know what will help them to regulate their emotions. So they will give a toy that helps them to do that, a fiddle toy, a stimming toy for those that know the language. Or they will give them an iPad or some sort of tablet that has an app that will help them to calm down and be able to relax in this place. They weren't rewarding bad behaviour. They were loving their child. This is a justice issue. And as you'll already see, it's got many layers. I'm only going to give you three of them because I haven't got time to give you a lot of information here. One of those layers is the myths and assumptions that we have to battle in every situation of life, but including in the church. Autism or any neurodivergence is not caused by anything done to a child. Not their jabs, not what they've eaten. They haven't eaten too much sugar. Mum hasn't drunk too much caffeine when they're pregnant. It is a different way of the brain working. And it is still God's creation. More discipline actually doesn't help. There will be a different way of disciplining for many of the children that to us will look as if it's not right. But it's what works. And many parents have been trained in how to use this sort of parenting to help children with different types of neurodivergence. Here's one. They're not all Rain Man. In fact, just about every autistic adult I know hates that film. Neurodivergence isn't a learning disability. It might affect the way people learn, but it's not a learning disability. But there may be an associated learning disability that goes with it. Remember, lots of autistic people are in jobs like being a doctor, a lawyer, or anything. And it doesn't affect people in a linear way, so you're not badly autistic or mildly autistic. Think of it like a colour circle. So some will struggle with communication, others won't. Some will struggle with loud noise, others won't. Some will stim a lot, others won't. So it's all sort of all over the place, which is why I said when you know one person who's neurodivergent, you know just one person. It's all different. Lots of people think that autistic people lack empathy, and that is completely false. It might appear like that sometimes, but there is this issue of empathy hurts, and they are so empathetic. They take so much of this on board, it physically hurts. So all they can do is shut down and look as if they don't care, whereas they're caring very much. And actually, many have learned how to take that painful empathy and put it into prayer. I'm very prayerful. And as I've already said, it's not a tragedy. It can be a struggle because this world is not set up for neurodivergence, but it's not a tragedy. Many see their autism as a gift. Many see their ADHD as a gift. Here's the next layer. It is fear. I'm going to be brutal again. Sorry. Fear of the unknown because we don't understand. So we back away. People do that with me in my wheelchair. Nobody's done it for this conference, which is brilliant. Thank you. But also, if it's outside of our own experience, it can make us fearful. I get that. I really do. We're fearful of needing to change how we do things in our fellowships. Ooh, we've got to change things. Why should we change it for the one? Well, if you change it for the one, you've just helped an awful lot of other people at the same time. And for some, the fear of changing our opinions about autism. Layer three, the spiritual. Did you know some people have written books about why they think autism is ungodly? And it's full of all sorts of ways to deal with it in casting out autism from a child when autism is who the child is. Well, they're more than that, but you know what I mean. Some people will go up to a child without the permission of parents to pray for the child, sometimes for the demon of autism to be removed, and sometimes just assuming that it's such a tragedy they've got to do something so they'll pray. Some people tell families that a generational curse has given their child autism. That's rubbish. Some have said it's caused by a family member a couple of generations back who was a Mason. I've had that one a couple of times. Where do people get this stuff? Others blame many non-spiritual things like, you know, feed them some kale, that'll sort them out. I get that one. Eat kale, love it, still disabled. Now, as I've said, much theology in this area is poor and there is little understanding around the wider themes of disability theology, especially within an orthodox view of scripture. And by the way, there are many more resources to build faith for any age of a child with any form of disability. I've been told there's no demand for it. I bet every one of you in this room has got people with autism in their churches. Is there no demand? There's great demand, especially for discipleship for teenagers. There's very little available. Now, a lot of the advice I'm now going to give, I'm now going to give you some practical things, okay? It's good advice for any additional need or disability. And you'll find that a lot of the descriptors for neurodivergence are very similar for those who have anxiety, PTSD, or faced early childhood trauma. So this is going to help a lot of the people who are struggling with mental health issues within your church, okay? You know that stand if you're able stuff? It's not just about people like me in a wheelchair. This is about every disability and will include autism. If you've got lights that are too bright or flickering, constant noise, you've got the person that's speaking too loudly and the person next to you that's singing out of key and that really bothers you, standing up is one thing that is just a step too far. So it's not just about people like me. It's about everybody. And it's the same if you suffer from extreme anxiety. Standing up for worship is just, it's not saying that you're not going to worship God. You just need to do it sitting down. Now, the following is to help you understand why any child, teen, or adult might react to things in the way they do. I've had a few conversations with people about, I need to understand why that person will lose their temper quite quickly, and it's obvious when I look at them that they're somewhere on the spectrum. The first thing you may notice, especially with children, is a meltdown. That might be a shouty meltdown. It might be a quiet meltdown, that child that will go to the furthest corner, sit down with their head right down and just rock. Not every child does a shouty meltdown. And we can miss the girls who won't do that. They will mask, go home, and then their parents get it full blast when they get home. But you'll get adults as well that will struggle. Most of the time, masking again. So you think everything is all right, but if you actually looked into their brain, it's melting. And if they're not actually giving a release to that, it's affecting their mental health as well. So we need to be aware of that. Sometimes we think someone is just being a bit rude. Have you come across that? Quite abrupt. I can be quite abrupt sometimes if I'm anxious about something. But actually, they're just being more efficient in their conversations. That's it. They're not being rude. You know, why take six sentences to say what you can say in one sentence? Maybe we should be teaching that to some preachers. So let's take that a step further. Now, a lot of people talk about this in terms of spoons. Now, that's going to sound weird. I'm not going to use spoons, but if you want to know more, Google the spoon theory, and it will help you to understand a bit more of what I'm saying. I'm going to use the same analogy, but I'm going to use money, okay? Think of an autistic child with £10 worth of emotional and physical energy, right? Getting ready to come to church has taken £4 of that energy. This might be because cleaning teeth is a big sensory challenge, so that's taken about half an hour to get it done. Then they've run out of the only cereal you can eat. And yes, I know it's the same thing and it's a different brand, but it's got a different smell, a different texture, and a different taste. So that has caused a bit of a meltdown over breakfast. Having to put on shoes and the laces caught inside and digging into your foot takes a bit of that energy and resilience. So you've lost all that. Then getting into the car was a challenge because next door's dog was barking loudly and cars were hooting. Your parents were trying to hurry you because you were late because you had a tantrum about cleaning your teeth. So it's all of a rush again. But you're still feeling the anxiety of, I'm going to church. I don't want to go to church. I don't like church. This happens at church. And then an argument starts with a sibling in the back of the car. Another car backfires and you have just taken another £2 worth of that energy. We're running out fast, aren't we? Getting into church uses another £2 because anxiety is now going through the roof because someone might want to shake your hand. Mrs. Jones always stares into your eyes. Why do people do that? And when she talks to you, she ruffles your hair. Don't touch me. And then you might get told off for sitting in the wrong place. Once you're in, the music group has overrun their practice time and the drums are so loud. But that means people are having to raise their voices to be heard over the band still rehearsing. So it's getting louder and louder and louder. Somebody else has just ruffled your hair. Your brain feels as if it's melting. You need space. You need something that's going to restore your ability to regulate your emotions because you now have absolutely nothing left after that £10 worth. Does that explain why children sometimes melt down just as the service is starting? And it happens to adults too, but you might miss it. Or it might be why you've just had that somewhat abrupt and rude conversation because they've gone through the same. I can't have my chair. I always sit there. And then there's a bit of a rumpus because that adult can't sit there. But they've chosen that chair because there's a dead spot in the noise. It means that the cars that are going past with the sun catching them and flickering across you can't get you just there. So what's going to happen when you can't have that seat? This is what the problem is. And the reason that I'm here this morning is to help you to understand why you might be getting those reactions. But it's one of the reasons I'm here. It's not naughtiness. It's self-preservation. An iPad isn't a reward. It's a tool. Right, I'm going to scoop down just to save some time. Now, each person will deal with all of this in very, very different ways. But it can explain that over-the-top reaction to something that is just so simple that we'd go, why? There is a reason why, and it's worth asking. If it's a child, ask the parents, what's the trigger? What can I do to make that stop? Is there something we can do? I remember a number of years ago in our own church, we had someone with a young lad that was autistic that would just explode as soon as he came in. But he was coming in late and he was coming in facing the congregation. So it was a retraining over many months because, you know, change. I've always come in that door. Why do you want me to go in that door? So it was a gradual change to bring him through the back. What feels like the back sometimes, but it's actually the front of the church. So he's not facing faces. Because stress can make you face blind, and that is a scary sight. And he's come in and he's settled. But then we started taking him out to Sunday school and he would melt down at a certain point. Why was he doing that? I knew straight away because it was something I was struggling with. To get to his class, he's got to go past the accessible toilet where the air freshener is too strong and permeates the whole of the corridor. That was it. Turn off the air freshener next week, no meltdown walking past it. Sometimes we have to be detectives to find it. Now, I'm going to go through using the five senses in a little while that will help just to look for all those different things. Now, talking about the pounds worth of energy, you can actually use the pop bottle to explain it in a different way. Just imagine you're going to work, you're catching the train, it's really noisy, There's been no seats. You're squashed up against people when you don't like people talking to you. If you've got that pop bottle shaking because people are touching me, I don't like smells, I've got to get to work, it's getting shaken quite vigorously. You've got to work. People don't understand something. You've had to swap computers because something's gone wrong with yours. That shakes it a little bit more. And so on and so on. I could take ages explaining this. But by the time you get home, they've taken the top off the bottle. What happens if you've shaken the bottle? It just explodes, doesn't it? Now, sometimes that explosion doesn't help until you feel as if you're in a safe environment. And if that person lives alone or even with somebody else, it might be arriving at your midweek Bible study in a place where they feel safe that they're going to explode. So be aware of that as well, because the pop bottle's just been shaken too much and they trust you. As I keep saying, each person's going to be different, like the colour wheel. Many find their own coping strategies that don't take away so much extra energy. And you can ask them what those are so you can understand them and if you can do something else to help. One of the things I love doing in children's work is providing a pop-up tent with a blanket over it where a child can just go to get away from these sorts of lights. Can you hear them buzzing? No, child with autism will. So in your church, if you've got those strip lights, they buzz. If you're using a projector, it whirs. If you've got fans in your church, they make a noise. All of those things can actually cause a problem. So be aware. If you know someone who is neurodivergent, has anxiety, or has faced trauma, has PTSD, get to know them. Find out the good stuff first, though. Don't go straight into, what's your problem? Doesn't work. Be friendly. Be kind. And remember that you might not get a conversation, but you might get one-word answers, and that's fine. You might just have to have an awful lot of conversations with one word. Don't go face-to-face. Go side by side whilst doing an activity. Do the washing up together. Go fishing together, if that's your thing. Find something that they love. And for many who are autistic or have ADHD, you will find they will have something that they will talk to you for hours and hours and hours and hours. Find that thing. Talk to them about it. Find out more about them. And you will find so much stuff that will bless you as well as inform you. I'll tell you a story about a lovely lad that I got introduced to by his mum when I was teaching her at Cliff College. She said, my son's not taken seriously at church, but can I tell you about him? Because I know you'll listen. She said, he's not very good at expressing himself. He talks to God in colours. So I said, oh, that's interesting. How does God respond? She said, in colours. Because he could understand that. His autism meant that colours spoke to him. You know, that colour represented this, that colour represented the other. And she said, you know, once a week they have a Zoom call with people from all over the world who are also autistic, and they pray for the world every Thursday afternoon. She said, but nobody in my church wants to know that. So we celebrated together and prayed for him. Find out what music they like, what pets, what interests, what things might be comfortable to chat about. And the one-word answers are not a sign of failure for you. It's just life. Right, think about the five senses, but also ask things like, ask hypothetically, because you're not going to actually do this without their permission, if I could tell the church something on your behalf or your child's behalf, what would it be? What would you like the whole church to know? That will give you a massive insight as to what's actually bothering and what the problem is. And whatever they say, it's bound to be something that another person has also found to be an issue but hasn't had the courage to speak up about. Okay, let's look through the five senses. This is very, very basic. I'm not giving you the, this is how you deal with someone who's not neurodivergent. I'm not going to do that. But this will help. But it won't just help those who are neurodivergent. It will help a lot of people in your church, including people who are older, many that will have learning disabilities, many that will have physical disabilities. It will help so many. Think hearing. Who likes really loud noises in here? You don't like a loud band that's, you know, the drums going. You are my people. I don't either. But loud noise is a problem, but everybody talking at once in an enclosed space is really, really loud to someone who is neurodivergent. Repeating noises doesn't have to be loud, but are you that sort of person that, I can't do it on here because you can't hear it, but clicks your fingers? That can be really annoying to somebody. It's a repetitive sound. The heating clicking, the buzz of the lights that I've already mentioned. Then there's sudden noise. The pitch, musical, vocal, microphone squeaking. Unexplained noise. Sometimes I spend most of my time with autistic children having to explain what that noise was. Then there's seeing, bright light. Very bright in here, isn't it? And yet the accessible loos have barely got any light at all. Flickering light. You can't see those flickering, but they are. Flashing light. That could be reflected light. As I've mentioned in an example earlier, the sun reflecting on cars that are driving past the church and it comes flickering into the church. That can be really annoying to people as well. As I said, you might find that annoying and you're not even neurodivergent. Unexplained light, strobing light. And then the stress face blindness that I mentioned earlier. That is when there are so many people, you walk into a room, you cannot see faces. You can't distinguish because somewhere in your brain has to shut down and it's that facial recognition that often shuts down. Kaleidoscope vision. Somebody that I know that's autistic drew a picture of this so I could try and understand it more. You look at something, so I see lots of nice colour there and I've got the white background and everything. What they will see is a mask over the top. So it could be pink and orange all going round, but it's that mask on top of everything. But it could be any colour. So everything looks different. So if you're talking in terms of, okay, go into the blue corner or just read the red writing on the screen. By the way, if you've got anybody in the church that's dyslexic, has a visual impairment, don't use red at all. Just avoid it. Background and text, don't use it. And then pictures and movement on the screens. Do you have words with something that moves behind or a picture behind where some of the text disappears? It's even worse if you're neurodivergent. And eye contact. One of the young men I was talking to who was autistic said, I cannot understand this preoccupation with staring at people's eyeballs. They can train themselves to do it, but actually for many children and adults, it hurts physically to look into your eyeballs. So be aware of that. Now, smell, I talked about air freshness with the young man that we had in our church. But there's also those that wear strong perfumes. Oh, and do you know the laundry smells that the different companies are trying to make last longer and be stronger? The majority of people don't want them to do that. And children who are on the spectrum somewhere do not like those sort of strong smells. Not all, but a good proportion of them. Touch, patting on the head, ruffling the hair, please don't. I am not autistic, but I don't like people patting me on the shoulder because I'm just the right height for that when I'm in my wheelchair. Sudden accidental touch can make a child or an adult flinch away because it physically hurts. I know it's only a little light touch, but it hurts. Labels on clothing. It's like the princess and the pea. You know, socks are worn inside out, even if they are the seamless socks, because they've still got a little bit of seam in there. They don't like labels in the back, trying to get them to wear uniform when it's really heavy and scratchy. The list goes on. And seating. Did you know that seating can be a source of irritation? I remember the church I went to as a child, they had the canvas seats. You know, metal tubing and a canvas there. And nobody could understand why I kept fidgeting. It's because the end of the canvas kept cutting into my legs. And every time I asked if I could wear trousers on a Sunday, I wasn't allowed to. You wear a skirt on a Sunday. So I never listened to anything in Sunday school because I was fidgeting. Taste. Did you know that smells taste? And especially if you're neurodivergent. So if you're having a church meal, any church that does that on a Sunday, and the smells are coming through, you'll find that some people are going, especially if they're cooking cabbage or Brussels or something like that. I'm not going to go into the whole eating difficulties of many that are neurodivergent, but remember this, that it's not fussy eating. It is about texture. It is about taste. And if a child picks up a biscuit and eats it and then spits it out, especially if they are neurodivergent, it is something about the texture, the taste, or they're expecting it to taste differently. It's the reaction, and it's the quickest way of getting rid of it. Right. I am going to end with a story and then open to questions. Okay. If you do ask any questions and it is you have a specific child in mind, can I ask you to catch me later? Because this is recorded. All right. And you never know who's going to hear it. So this is a child where a parent came up to me and she was upset because her child had suddenly said, "I hate God." And she thought they loved God. "I hate God." I said, "Well, it's quite normal for most children to do that. If something's going wrong, who's the easiest person to blame? Because they don't think he's going to answer." He does. So I had a chat with him. I said, "Oh, you hate God today then. Why's that?" And he said, And then just sat there fiddling for a while. And he said, "I don't like God today. Actually, there's quite a few days I don't like God. Why's that?" I have my inside world. Now, I need to explain that a lot of children who are neurodivergent will have their imaginary world. It is where they process. It is where they think things through. What they've learnt, what they've seen, is their processing place. One of my goddaughters does the same. She has unicorn land, and she'll talk to various unicorns or fairies or princesses, and they will help her sort things out. And this will be the difference between the two of them. He said, "God keeps saying, 'Let me into your inside world,' and I don't want him in there." And then he sat for a bit longer and he said, "I suppose I should let him into my inside world." "Yes, you should." Okay. And then we prayed together. "Dear God, welcome into his inside world." I'm not giving his name because we're being recorded. "Please help him to process along with the other characters that are in his inside world." And that was it. That's why he hated God, because God was nagging him. My goddaughter allows God in. Jesus is always in there next to the unicorn or talking to the princess or something. But isn't it wonderful the different ways that God and the Holy Spirit can actually speak to our children who are neurodivergent in ways that we could never even think or comprehend. So I'll close with, don't forget to disciple them. of any age. Don't forget to mentor them of any age. Don't forget to pray for them. If you're talking to the parents, say, what can I pray for? What can I do? And don't say, I'm so sorry that you've got this. Because although it's hard for them, they love their child to bits, ferociously, Mama Bear style. And make sure that you badger people that don't produce accessible resources for people that need them. Write to everybody you can saying, there is a demand. We need these for our children. Because I'm sick of it just being me always writing. So please join me. Okay. Any questions? Even if you've got advice, please do say, oh, this worked in our church. You know, I don't know everything.
What's your opinion on like sensory rooms, and do you have any advice? Well, I know you mentioned the photo tent, but what about a room where it could be taken out of the wall?
Okay, a sensory tent, I mean, we are talking children that process better with that, so it is any child with a learning disability or children that are neurodivergent and process better within that environment. If you have a child that's melting down, they need less sensory stimulation, not more. So it will work for half of the kids with additional needs, but the other half will just need that space with very little in it, just a fiddle box. So, but join the Additional Needs Alliance. There's always a feed somewhere on there that's talking about how to set these things up. Right, I've got two hands over there, so gentleman with glasses first, and then I'll go behind. Yeah.
Do you have any advice about how, if we want to put things in place that will help neurodivergent children, but then have the possibility of making them seem odd, frankly, to other children and their peers and things like that? Have you got any advice on how we could help mitigate that, help them to build relationships and help them to be accepted and not looked at sideways, but also still actually helping them and providing them with what they need?
Okay, long question.
Sorry.
That's fine. It is really not separating them out, isn't it, and making them completely different and building the relationships. Okay, we talk about inclusion as in everybody's together, we put them together and they suddenly you'll find that they're struggling. I'll start by saying inclusion is also being separate if they need to be separate. Don't force them into a mold they're not comfortable in. But you'll find that most children are used to other autistic children in their classes. And one of the camps that we did, what I said was to the other children was, oh, his brain just works differently to yours. Ask him about it. And they did. He was baptized last year. Yes. I would say the way that you teach someone who is neurodivergent will help the rest of your children as well, especially when they've had a stressful week at school. So try putting some of those in place for all of the children so they're not quite so separated out. There is time for keeping them together for certain activities, buddy them up. There is time for separating them out for teaching that is more understandable. So I think if you are helping the others to be more accepting and praying about it, encouraging them to pray about it with permission, all that sort of thing, you'll find that all the other children will be accepting of it. But just making that point that having a brain that works differently doesn't make you odd. Now, people sometimes ask me the same question when it comes to behaviour. I'm letting them get away with it, but they're not. But this is what is happening in schools. And just saying, he just needs us to help him differently, whereas you don't. But we're loving you just as much. but wouldn't it be great if you helped us by setting the example so they can actually see it demonstrated? Because a lot of autistic children need the demonstration of how to do stuff. So, but I can talk more on that or put you in touch with other people that would be very helpful.
A two-part question, I guess, with the preface. I was intrigued by your early comment that there's sort of a lack of evangelical writing in this area. So there's plenty of people writing about theology and disability. To the left, I think of people like Jean Vanier in the UK. I think of people more neo-Orthodox, maybe John Swinton, Brian Brock.
John Swinton, brilliant. Yeah.
So one, why is there a lack in evangelical circles? And two, I think the first question is more important, but two, is the lack sort of a systematic theology of disability, or sort of just practical theology here and how we as Christians should approach the subject?
It's a bit of both. There are theologians around. John Swinton is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Jean Vanier, because of issues, I wouldn't use his stuff now. I'm assuming you're aware. Yeah. And there are other things. It's just that the majority in accessible formats is not good. But the theology is, well, let's think of children. Yeah, we talk about sin and we teach sin. Now, having been a children's worker, I have been accused of abusing children through my faith using penal substitution. Because we talk about sin in the context of, well, let me put it a different way. What we're normally talking about is deliberately going against God. We are talking about deliberate behavior in a child's language, doing things that God makes God sad. That's just one way of describing it for younger children. But what we miss off is the deliberately. So children that are autistic or in neurodivergent are often known as naughty children, and they've been told they're naughty. So as soon as we start talking about sin, they think they are unlovable. So that is one area of theology we need to be looking at in the context of neurodivergence. And actually saying we need to be clear that this is deliberate. God understands their brain. God understands why they're melting down. He doesn't hate them because of that. So we need to be careful with the teaching. I know what I go through as a disabled person, getting accosted in London with people saying, if I got out of my wheelchair, I would be more lovable. You know, you need to be healed. Jesus can get you out the wheelchair. Now, kids that are neurodivergent get that all the time as well, but they can't process it. How do we give them the theology to cope with that? That actually, you know, has God caused it, or is it God's will, or has God created them like that? Where do you go? We've probably got six different opinions on that in this room. You know, where does the sovereignty of God lie when it comes to disability? So we need some theology there, and it could go on and on and on and on. Does that help where I'm going with where we've got the theology? So we can talk about basic theology of disability, but it's how does it impact us on the ground with the children we have and the adults?
Two kind of related questions, really. How do we begin that conversation with a parent about their child, particularly, in terms of, you know, maybe if they're not aware that their children might be on neurodivergent perhaps, and so how we begin that conversation of sort of, you know, helping them to help us,
yeah,
etc. But also along with that, in terms of perhaps parenting children who are neurodivergent, are there resources that we can point them towards to help, that we can maybe do with them to help them better parent their children?
Yeah. Yeah. Firstly, the families that don't know, don't realise, or are just putting the blinkers on a lot of the time. Sometimes it is just saying, we love having your child here, but we just notice they're struggling a little bit. Have you noticed that elsewhere? Do they have the same problems at school? And maybe school has picked it up and already had the conversation. So all you're doing is adding to the conversation. But having lots of pastoral care in place for them. Because sometimes they're actually going through the grieving process, having only just noticed and understood. And part of that grieving process in additional needs is ignoring it for a while. So with that one. In the discipline area, it is chatting to them just about, you know, who is involved. Social workers will sometimes be very helpful people in that. Other times it's really good for children's workers to sort of cotton on to good people that will give advice, especially if you've got a good family worker that can get alongside. Now, if you join a group like the Additional Needs Alliance, it's on Facebook, but it's a private group. We have parents in there that are along this same journey, and they can give the advice. They can give it straight to the parents, or they can talk directly to the children's leaders or your family worker or anybody like that. There are various routes like that. I mean, we could talk at another time just to write a few things down that could actually help. Care for the Family are very good. They have a whole section on parenting a child with additional needs and a buddying system as well. So do be in touch with them. They're brilliant.
Is neurodivergence something that is becoming more common, or is it that we just understand it better, it's more accepted, better kind of diagnosed, or are there kind of certain environmental factors which are making it kind of more common, you know, the trauma of lockdown for certain people, or is it you're born neurodivergent, or
yeah,
are there people that are kind of prone to neurodivergence that can be tipped into it by early childhood trauma, things like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions in that as where it comes from. I can say you are born with neurodivergence. Childhood trauma tips into attachment disorder, which can look like autism. Any sort of trauma can look like autism. Anxiety can look like autism, but it's not. So a lot of parents will think my child is autistic, but actually no, they're, which is why you actually need the proper, I think we're safe. We need the proper diagnosis process, but children are waiting up to 3 years for a diagnosis. The other thing is our world is busier. It's louder. It's got more light. It's more brash. So it's being more noticeable. So whereas we just thought it was an odd child, you know, just a bit quirky, they are autistic. So, but you will find that autism runs in families. So I'm adopted, so it's fine. But a lot of people now are being diagnosed as adults because their child has been diagnosed, and all of a sudden everything has dropped into place. And then when they sort of talk about it, actually, this is something that is really important that I've missed out, that I'm finding a lot of parents that have just been diagnosed with autism because of their child being diagnosed, that the church is not actually being that sympathetic towards them. And no, you seem quite normal. You can't be autistic. No, they've been masking. So it's yes to all the questions. Oh, where to go? What? How are we doing on time? I am around all of the conference, so you can grab hold of me at some point. You've had your hand up quite a while.
What do you do about a family that's got three children that have autism? Do you have they're struggling and the children can't attend church, they're having to come, you know, they're coming themselves, coming to one session, you know, and it's painful to see, and I feel hopeless, you know, because I don't feel equipped to help them. And I just
Yeah, so a family with three children that are autistic can't get to church. What do we do? Do you have online church?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is one thing for the parents. Are the children known in the church?
Yeah.
Actually starting a relationship with those children, sort of turn up for a cup of coffee with the children there so the children start to know them and trust them, and working with the parents for that to happen, so that at least someone can go and babysit the children so the parents can go to church together and on their own, because that's really important, because that builds up their spiritual integrity to be able to support their children. It's a vicious cycle sometimes. If you are doing things with the children in church, depending on where the kids are at, on how they're learning themselves, finding ways to make them accessible and dropping those activities off. Or giving a suggestion, oh, we just found this story of Jonah online. It's absolutely brilliant. Have a look at this on YouTube. So it's just for their kids. Finding ways of encouraging home devotions that are accessible. And that doesn't mean the children always doing them. It also means the children watching so that they can learn and see the example. But I can talk more about that if you want to, if you want to catch me around.
Is there anything specific you could say about ADHD and how we make church and children's church accessible for children with that condition?
Yeah, children with ADHD, how to make it more accessible. Use them in helping. I know that probably not for a four-year-old, but as they're getting older, you'll actually find that they are the most kind, caring, empathetic people you will meet. So if I'm running a camp, it's the kids with ADHD, I'm asking to buddy the other kids. And they're great at it. Give them a responsibility of any sort. Sometimes it's us having to be brave and allowing them to spin on the spot, because they're actually listening to you spinning on the spot. Have a box of fiddle toys, quiet ones, so that the kids can fiddle them. You will find that if you have things like the bendy yellow stretchy men, the ones that you can just do that with, they will get flicked around the room, and that's fine. If you want them to put them down, they won't. So get them to warm them up and flick them. If you've got to polystyrene tiles, they will stick and stay up there. So, which, and you can use that idea as a prayer activity as well. The best fiddle toy I've found is a zip. And you can use that as a teaching aid as well, especially with the gospel. So just buy a pile of zips and you just, you know, but make sure it's a ring zip, not a little tab, because they're easier to handle.
Yeah, just want them then, don't
they? Yeah, give them all. That's it. So they've all got a fiddle toy, but they will listen to you. If they're sitting there staring at you, they're not listening, they're daydreaming. It's the fiddling kids that are listening.
You were talking about the £10 going down.
Yeah.
And one of the things I noticed as you were talking about is that the £10 goes down sometimes because of the church people. But how do we teach our church people about autism? And that, do you do it like this? Get somebody in and talk about it? What would you advise?
Yeah, it's advising how other church members can actually learn everything that we've learned this morning. You could have someone come and train. As the Additional Needs Alliance, we've got three trainers that travel. I'm one of them. You could just talk to the parents. A great thing to do is to have an advocate in the church, so a champion for additional needs in your church is actually vital. And that champion can speak on their behalf. So with permission, you could actually use a little bit of the service to just somebody stand up and speak on their behalf, because it's not fair to ask the parents to do it, and just say, you've probably met so-and-so, and starting with the positive. So I've done this with a child with, he loves the colour blue, so if he draws you anything, the dog's going to be blue, the sky's going to be blue, the grass is going to be blue. He loves those biscuits with cows on them, malted milk, and he doesn't like squash, he prefers a glass of milk. And he's a lovely boy. His thing he's interested most in is, and then we talked about his thing. Now, he's in the church, and you know what would really help him to feel comfortable in the church? It would be to remember that actually he doesn't like his hair ruffling. So don't actually touch him, just say his name. And if he's able to, he will turn around and chat to you. But stress the able to, because if he's having a bad day, he's not going to turn around and talk. So it's that sort of approach. We go for the positive first, and then we say, this is how we can help. So how that would work if the parents don't want you to do it, I'm not sure. It would be get a trainer in and talk generally about it. Right, I know you have got to go and fight in the queues to get your lunch. So we are around. I'm quite happy to be ambushed. So I'm not going to go into any of the other seminars so that I can be just available for anybody that wants to chat. Okay.